And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear here on Declare Your Independence from Ernest Hancock. Each and every day from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. Make sure you check out freedomsphoenixezine.com. We're really focusing on that because, that's where we get a lot of the archived, behind-the-scenes, what's really going on information. Freedoms Phoenix is there kind of a wide radar screen, and we cover a lot of things. Now, today we have Chris Lawless from New Hampshire. We'll get into, we're going to have some fun with Chris in a little bit. But right after that, in the second hour, it's going to be Larkin Rose, and in the third hour, Sabell Edmonds. Now, we are building up to this week. We packed up all the guests because, there's a lot of stuff going on. We want to make sure we know what's happening. Now, Chris is well-known at the Free State Project in New Hampshire, trying to get people to go there, and we're going to be free in the live free or die state. Now, Chris has been a big push for this because he's such a nice guy, and he's there to help. And when you go, he's going to help you move in. You go down there, man, the boy brings the boys, and they're going to have all the moving equipment, and they're going to get you taken care of and make your transition to freedom a lot easier. Now, they have several events that they do, and two of the most notable is Liberty Forum, that's coming up at the end of next month in February, and then we have Pork Fest, which is a party. So that, I like parties. Party's fun. So this is, I'm glad we got Chris. We've been trying to get hold of him for a while, but he's like busy. You got a real job, don't you, Chris?
Yeah, I was actually, the first time he called me, I don't know where I was. I think I was in New York City. I'm traveling almost all the time for work.
So. And what is that work?
I'm a product manager for a software company. So I help out with sales. I visit customers. I help out with development, that type of stuff.
Okay. So you're can I call you a big computer geek?
I think that's a perfect way to put it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So it's almost like a minimum job requirement for a libertarian. So we have the ability to communicate. Now, what you're communicating, and in addition to having the avenues and the social networking and the ability to be a touchstone for people looking for the kind of things that you're advocating, you're also like an ambassador. I mean, Chris will take care of business. Chris is the guy that's going to, get you in touch with the right people. Chris is going to hook you up and whatever you're, I guess your interests are and the kind of people that you'd be friends with and families or singles or young. So you are the one that's really got kind of a bead on the type of people, the demographics of the people that are actually moving to New Hampshire. So I want you to go ahead and explain to the audience, there's people listening in Oregon, Nashville, Atlanta, and you say, hey, you come here, there's people just like you, just a smaller crowd. Now, tell me the types of people and the different little enclaves, the cliques, is there something for everybody?
Yeah, I was going to say, that's actually one of the beauties, I think, about the Free State Project is, I think the Free State Project is what you make of it. Now, many people say, hey, I want to get involved in politics. If you want to, there's plenty of Free Staters and Natives involved in politics. They can help you show you the ropes if you haven't been involved and help you with either local politics in your town or at the state level. We usually don't do too much at the national level, but I'm sure we'll get into that later. I would say the next big group of people are the civil disobedience, or, you know, the people who are fighting the system other than voting electoral politics. Many of them are headquartered in Keene. There's also a growing contingent in Manchester, and those are the people who they're not going to back down. They have been arrested. Many spent time in jail, but it hasn't backed them down. They're still living their lives, and they're still fighting the system through outside the system means. Lots of those.
Okay, now I want to talk about that. When the Free State Project was first getting going, we have an annual event that we do called the Freedom Summit here in Phoenix, and they would come and get a table for years and, you know, promote what they were doing, and we started doing the radio, and we're promoting it, and then when they announced the day after we had, God, it was Amanda, you know, on the air, and we're talking about it. Yeah, what happened to Amanda anyway? She was like a uber-intelligent Harvard law kind of something involved in this, and then once the project got going, we kind of lost track of her. Do we know where she's at?
She's down in Massachusetts, I believe, and working as a lawyer.
Yeah. You know, well, the one thing that we made sure is that we understood the process of the selection of New Hampshire, the kind of people that were going there, what their mission was, and it kind of broke down this way. There are people that just want to go and be left alone. And they, you know, kind of, I kind of got the impression they're strung out across the state, but probably more in northern New Hampshire, and I'm off grid and don't bother me. Then you have the people that civil disobedience, like you're saying in Keene, the Keeniacs, the, you know, Free Keene, whatever you want, the Free Talk Live guys and so on. They're just, hey, you know, we're in the face of the man because the man needs somebody in their face. And then you have in Manchester, Nashua, I guess, would be more like Concord and so on, where the seats of government are. Is they're more looking at an opportunity to try and actually change government, where the more anarchist types are more about trying to change the people. And I'm starting to see in the last couple of years, it's starting to meld to where, you know, everybody's tolerating each other. Has there been an equilibrium reached to where everybody sees the division of labor benefiting everybody?
I think we're slowly getting to a better place. We're certainly better than we were in the past where, you know, there'd be the rock throwing and we're like, guys, we're all on the same side. I think we've reached more of a balance. We're starting to get some talking about working together, like how can we have some civil disobedience that will help the law, you know, the politicals change a law and then vice versa. So we are starting to see some more cooperation. It's actually pretty encouraging to see. And then I would also say that there's actually another group out there. And it's kind of, I would say, outside the system. It's, you know, the free marketeers. There's many people who have started businesses up here without asking the state. They're just starting their businesses. You know, there's some in Keene, there's some in Manchester, there's some in Concord. And they're just doing their own thing, providing a service or a good without contacting or benefiting the state in any way.
Well, that
outside the system activism.
Does that get support from the people that are trying to write the laws? This is how it goes. The principle is, I came here in the live free or die state, leave me alone. This whole point was to not have to get permission from the man to, you know, live my life, blah, blah, blah. And then you have people that are in politics. You're making us look bad. You know, if you were to, you know, wear a tie and work more inside the system and get the permits and lobby us and run for office, then we could actually, you know, get the permission slip from the man by changing, you know, the permission slip. And I can see where principle and practicality start to, you know, headbutt there. But from looking at this over the years that you've been involved, which one has more effect on the other? I mean, is there any advancement towards freedom? Are you seeing laws changed? And why do you think it is? Is it from the pressure from the other side or cooperation inside the system? I mean, this is the really important question because this was the reason why you did the Free State. It was for this experiment. And you, better than anyone else, got a front row seat on it. What are you finding out?
Definitely laws have been changed. We've seen that. Like, New Hampshire has no night laws.
Oh, we're going to get that. Oh, it's on your edge of your seat. On the edge of your seat. We'll get to that very answer. We come back here on Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, and Chris Lawless from the Free State Project and Liberty Forum. Coming up next month, we'll talk about that. We come back in just a little bit.
This is Charles Goyette, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Dollar Meltdown, so you can learn how to protect yourself and your family. Now, you can audit the Fed. You can end the Fed. But why not start by ignoring the Fed? Visit DontTreadOnMeme.com. That's Don't Tread on M-E-M-E, Fashioning the Silver Economy. A meme, a contagious idea that spreads within a culture, a spontaneous order. Nowhere is this more evident than in one's free choice in that most marketable of commodities, money. Let us Austrians use wallet voting. Don't Tread on Meme, the leading craftsman of silver dime trading cards, as well as some offbeat liberty-themed apparel. Follow the history of the dime card outreach at onceuponadime.info and get a silver calculator app at whatisthiscoinworth.info. Boycott an empire of theft. Build a society of consent. Don't Tread on Meme. Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
No roads, no roads, no roads, no roads. Here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, where it's very nice, very nice. New Hampshire is very nice also. Now, I spent, during the 08 election cycle, I was there a week and a half before Christmas and a week and a half after New Year's. We were there, and I tell you, it was like record snow, but it was efficient. I mean, it wasn't like we're waiting on the big giant collective man and their snow plow to come get. Everybody just took care of themselves. That was kind of how the neighborhood was organized. And things just, it was record snowfall. And all we had to do was wait an hour and boom, taken care of. Roads are beautiful. The scenery's great. I was there last summer. I tell you what, I was so relaxed. I got a convertible Mustang, did that, you know, middle-aged man thing, and went up to Pork Fest and then drove around the state a little bit for a few days afterwards. And all I did, I put my Droid camera up, my cell phone, and took a video with the music blaring of me driving through these beautiful winding roads and just put it on my, you know, quick account. And my wife looking, I'm going, yeah, this is what I'm doing. Yeah, baby. So it is a beautiful state. Now, tell me how the people have received the invasion. And certainly after Dr. Paul is, made an impact there in the primary that's come up, it can't go unnoticed that you guys are there. What is the indigenous population, you know, what's their kind of take on y'all?
It's really a mixed bag. There are some who call us reinforcements. They said, we've been fighting this fight for a long time. Thank you for coming. It was great to work with many of them during the campaign. And then, of course, we're getting the blowback where, you know, we have changed some laws at the State House, and many people are blaming the Free Staters. A lot of the so-called liberals, because I don't really want to see things on the left and right spectrum, but many of these people, the Democrats, are saying they want, you know, less taxes, they want less regulations, they want less, you know, they want better gun rights, and it's amazing to see the pushback, and we're getting blamed, rightly or wrongly, they blame the Free Staters for it. So we are getting some pushback, but many people in my town, they just know me as Chris. They don't know me as Chris the Free Stater, they know me as Chris the guy. The volunteer, the guy with the kids. So it's a lot of people, once they get to know you as a person and they know you as a good person, they don't care what other someone else labels you because they just know me as that guy.
Well, so, do you see a cultural shift in the thinking? I mean, from the time that you guys started getting there, are they starting to be educated? Is it just the young? Is it come across all demographics? Or senior citizens hunkering down and, you know, not giving in, or are they starting to show up? I mean, tell me culturally, how is it shifting?
So New Hampshire has always been a small government type of state. You know, we have no income tax, no sales tax. But I do see a shift of people, you know, with the Bush-Obama record deficits and, like, record pushing from above the federal government, I see people getting frustrated and mad. In my little town, probably where I have the best, you know, place to see, I did see a huge demographic switch for Ron Paul. We had a lot older and younger just saying, you know what, he said the same thing he said 4 years ago, and everything he said was true about bigger government at the town level, bigger government at the state level, bigger government at the federal level. So I think a lot of people are just fed up. So I think that the message of the Free Staters is going to kind of resonate this year and further, saying, hey, these people came here to keep it small or none, depending on their point of view. So I think it's going to be a little bit more warmly received.
Well, how does that translate into legislation? Tell me about when I was at Pork Fest last time. This is the impression that I got. There are several people that made it their goal to become state legislators. They did. You know, they were successful. They're in. They're making sure that they, you know, get to have their say. And it's not as difficult. I mean, you have how many hundreds of legislators are there?
We have 400 in the House of Representatives that are paid a salary of $100 per year.
Okay, now 400, that puts about, I don't know, what is it, a few thousand a legislator or something?
About 3,000, yeah.
So you have a representation of 1 to 3,000, which is probably a lot better than most places. And you have this large contingent of legislators in there, you know, ouch quit it, whatever they're doing. Then you have the people that are representing the Free State ideology. I'm wondering, how many of them are Free Staters? How many of them are starting to come the Free Stater way? And is there a coalition building and growing? And then the, because I saw, the reason I, what I'm building up to is at Pork Fest, I saw some of the legislators, they came, and I don't think they got the respect, you know, the props that they were looking for, you know. They go, hey, we did this, and we cut in the budget, and we could have, and everybody's like, yeah, you're still voting? I mean, you know, they just didn't care. And I'm wondering how that impacts them, and what kind, does that drive them more into working with the state government kind of thing? Are they trying to appeal to the anarchist type, and what are the anarchists looking for? So this dynamic is, you're the person to ask on this. Help me out. Understand the dynamic in the legislature and the impact the anarchists have on their mindset.
So there are about a dozen, I believe, Free Staters who've been elected. It's kind of hard now because sometimes I think people are Free Staters and they're not, and vice versa. There are natives who kind of have the exact same mindset. They were just here before us. I do agree with you that Porkfest is more of an anarchy type crowd than maybe the legislators were hoping for. And I do see some cooperation. I just saw on the board the other day one of the legislators who's a well-known Republican legislator, and he was talking to some of the anarchists, and he goes, hey, give me four or five issues I can work on that I can get your support. And the anarchist saying, I can help you. I'm not going to vote for you. I'm not going to work on your campaign, but here are some ideas. So I do see the broaching out, the reaching out to the other side to kind of get some working together. You know, the anarchists are still saying, I disagree with the government altogether, but if you can get, you know, 5%, 10% of them back, I can help you for some individual gains, but overall, I think your system is corrupt.
You know, I think that's probably the best, and that kind of happens here, too. I mean, you know, I'm involved in politics a great deal, but I haven't voted since 2002. You know, a lot of people are surprised at, you know, all the activism and stuff that I go, yeah, I vote with a sign, man. You know, I'm not going to have some government computer to determine, you know, my expression, you know, I know better. But the thing, it doesn't mean that we can't use politics and people that are involved in it. I got a letter from a senator just in the last week, like Thursday or something, and he was trying to convince a bunch of people that are Ron Paul people, and he included me, you know, in the email at number one. They're like, look, I'm, you know, Ernie's got, you know, Ernie will agree with me kind of thing. And what he was saying was, there's a resolution they're passing in the state of Arizona at the Senate level, goes through the Senate, and it was a resolution saying that if, you know, we want to support Dr. Ron Paul's bill to pull out of the United Nations. If our nation does not use its veto power to stop any kind of incursion or something that would make mad Israel. And I'm going, seriously, that's your trigger? Is if we don't support Israel enough, we'll get out of the UN? I'm going, man, you guys just don't get it. You know, so, yes, I see the battle going on this front. And on the tippy is Crit.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, in Phoenix, Arizona, where it's very, very nice. Now, New Hampshire is very nice, certainly in the summer, when we go to Porkfest. Now, in February, it's also a very nice, and I tell you what makes New Hampshire nice, it doesn't matter what time you go, is that it's the people, it is the atmosphere, it is the lower pressure, it is this decentralized, and you can tell it just by driving around. I remember as a young man in the late 60s, we'd go on vacation with my family. We'd drive from Florida to Arizona to visit my mother's family. Now, what would happen is you had some interstate. I mean, the interstate was getting going. You know, it's been around for like a 10-year thing at the time. They're just getting that going everywhere. But you still had a lot of state roads. You had a lot of side roads. You had a lot of, you know, we're screaming, no, stop there. And it's old Mother Hubbard in a shoe motel like teepees or spaceports or whatever. I mean, it was a variety of whatever they did to get travelers to stop there. And it was different. It wasn't like, you know, every off-ramp had a Denny's, McDonald's, and Jack in the Box. It was a totally different country back then. Well, they got all homogenized and everything, and it's all cookie cutter, except New Hampshire. New Hampshire is different. Now, you'll have a lot of this, but it's all unique to each individual community, and they take care of themselves their way and more quickly with less crap. I noticed this right off the bat. It's a totally different kind of atmosphere. Now, before we get to the Liberty Forum, Chris, I want you to help me understand, why is that? I mean, there's some structure, some fundamental foundational ideology of something that makes New Hampshire so unique compared to a lot of other states. What do you think that is?
I think it comes to two things. I actually do think the winter is a good thing in that regard, because I think back in the old days, the colonists had to kind of work together to get stuff done, and they didn't like outside forces telling them what to do. So I think that kind of grew into the Yankee mentality of, you know, independent, don't leave me alone, I'll just get it done. I believe that. And then I believe that the lack of an income tax and sales tax has forced people to rethink things and say, we don't need this outside stuff, whether it be corporatism or it be big government. They said, we'll just take care of our own, we'll do things our own way. And I think it grew up over the past 300 years that way. It is a very interesting thing. I moved from California to New Hampshire, and that is exactly one of the first things I noticed, is that there are a lot more mom-and-pop shops. There's not as many big chains. I mean, you know, we certainly have the chains and stuff here, but they're not everywhere like they are in other places. And I believe it's a combination of winter and the way things grew up.
The population is much more diverse. I mean, not in demographics, but I mean spread out geographically. It's just they're spread out more. And I think without the concentration of population, the chains don't do as well. You know, it's
right.
they want you consolidated to be able to do that. But in an effort to do that, you start getting into zoning, what you can and can't do. You can or can't run a business out of your home. You can or can't have this on how close to the road, you know, and regulation and demand and forms to fill out and permits. So when you, the more you get to that, the more you kind of concentrate population. Here come the big box stores, and they start lobbying and saying, look, we need to have some kind of zoning thing. We need a subsidy to bring our whatever here. We need, that kind of thing. And I'm wondering if that is infiltrating as your population, you know, you anticipate it hopefully will grow, you know, certainly with, you know, free state minded individuals. I'm wondering, is there a lot of lobbying and influence from large companies to do this kind of stuff? Because we've seen it happen before with all kinds of, you know, like, you know, taxing authorities and eminent domains and this kind of thing. Or are you guys more immune, and is that immunity growing?
I do think we are seeing somewhat of that in the southern part of New Hampshire. It is, southern part of New Hampshire is more suburbia and more has those things. Northern part doesn't. We do have something against eminent domain in our New Hampshire Constitution. The good thing, I think, is that most of the laws are community-based regarding zoning, so each community decides on their own. Like, there are some towns with no zoning laws whatsoever in New Hampshire. And I think that those Hounds have kind of grown up with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. So I do think unless they get huge outside influence, they're never going to change unless, you know, they're very proud of their independence.
Well, tell me the influence you guys have had culturally. We started talking about that, and I want to get to that and how it influences legislation. Are the legislators that are in there, are they there defending the status quo? Are they there for reform, or is there a battle going on? Tell me about that.
There's certainly a battle. This past session, they did cut $1 billion out of the budget, which was huge. I think it's one of the only states to ever have a decrease of that much in a budget in 1 year. I think that many people recognize that fiscal issues were number one, and that did have to come down. So statewide, when you talk about shrinking government and small government, you're not going to be running out of town. People like nod their head and say, yeah, they didn't cut enough. And that always warms me up when I hear, you know, an old Yankee down at the corner store tell me, well, you're one of those free staters. They need to cut more than $1 billion, not just $1 billion. So that always gives me hope that there are like-minded people in the state. I think that young people just realize, you know, the system's broken. It's corrupt, and, you know, so they want no part of this big government stuff. So they're either dropping out or they're getting involved to try to shrink it.
Okay, now let's talk about Dr. Paul's campaign there and everything. Now, you know, what people have noticed, all right, was when he gave his post-primary speech that night, and, you know, a lot of people, the bad guys don't get it. They don't understand. It's all about how long you can keep him up on the podium saying freedom, you know, is the answer and government sucks. I mean, you know, this is do that, we win. The more he's up there saying it, we win. The more minds he frees, we win. I mean, just keep win, 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 win. But the system and the computer say you came in third. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. You're confusing us with someone that cares. So this is... they don't understand that. They don't see it as a movement. They don't understand. They can't comprehend it. But here this Saturday, Arizona had their Maricopa County Republican Convention, which had over 1,000 people there or more. And then 2 weeks from now, they'll have the state convention. It was overwhelmingly Ron Paul. I mean, 60% of the people had Ron Paul stuff on. I mean, it was, and they had a poll of the Maricopa County Republicans online where they said, you know, who would you vote for in the South Carolina primary? It was over 60% Ron Paul right away, so they shut it down, took Ron Paul's name off, and then put it back up. Said, well, you guys are cheating. Really? Well, when you have that many show up in person, just overwhelm the convention, I'm like, you get it now? You know, so this is happening, you know, planetarily, man. I mean, everywhere. The cosmos knows. So when he's given that speech to an enthusiastic young crowd and everything, behind him was Chris Lawless with his head chopped off, okay? They made the mistake of putting him in the back row up on some kind of elevated stand or something, and then a smaller man in front of him, and it's like the top of his head was, you know, your belly. So I'm like, I'm wondering why they didn't, you know, switch positions on you guys. Who did the seating chart?
it was when I actually spoke first on that at that event, and I was ready to walk off stage, and they said, no, stay on stage, and that was the only space left for me. So unfortunate coincidence that we probably didn't think ahead to it, but you're right, the young people get it. That crowd was fired up. I have a lot more hope for the future than I had. It's the young people, they get it, they get freedom. And you're absolutely right. The media has no idea. They can't figure it out. They've asked me 15 times, and I told them, but they go, well, there's got to be something. And I'm like, you guys are never going to get this.
No, I understand. It's something. It's something that they can't grasp because they seek power. They think that our goal is power. We want our turn at the ring of power. They don't understand the concept that we're the hobbits, and we just want to take the ring and throw it into the fires of Mordor. No, you can't destroy the ring. Then there wouldn't be a ring. Yay, I say. We'll be right back here with Chris Lawless in just a little bit.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free.
And so do I. Just want to break free. And the discussion has always been how to do that. And there is no one answer. There's no central plan for freedom. And one of the ways, at least we need to know. We need to know. Can you do it inside the system? Can you go someplace and concentrate your effort in such a way to be able to see an advancement in that? And then, and at the same time, I would contrast to people that are in the same place, and just by osmosis, just by the people changing their culture, their mindset, you know, they free their mind. Does that have a supporting effect for those that want to use government to change the rules of the game, to do it? You know, and where better, and who better than Chris Lawless to do this with the Free State Project in New Hampshire? They've gotten a lot of attention over at least two presidential election cycles. And the increase in support that you saw for Dr. Paul and the ideas that you guys espouse and so on, you know, was because I was there 4 years ago. And I mean, damn, it was going on then. Was it more this time? About the same? Different? Tell me the comparisons between 08 and 12.
It was so much better this time. I mean, we had, I mean, you can talk to Sovereign Curtis about the Ron Paul bus we had going along. But this time, it was very interesting that there were a lot more natives this time. Like, and part of us was it the economy? Was it Ron Paul's message? Was it our hard work through the past 4 years? I think it was a combination of everything. But the fact that we're talking about these ideals of freedom and liberty the past 4 years, I think, has definitely helped as we've reached out to neighbors. The time was right. It was electric this year. I mean, you're right. 2007, 2008 was fantastic. But this year it seems like it's fantastic, but it has further legs.
It was kind of cool this time. They could come out of the closet. They understood what they would be supporting from the efforts last time. Did it build on it, or was it, you know, just a self-realization? Was it because of TV? And, oh, that's another thing. The PAC, the Ron Paul Super PAC, what impact did that have?
They brought a lot of people up on Saturday. We did a lot of work with them on Saturday, be it lip drops and sine waves. So that's probably the bigger impact that they had. There was also this thing, I always call it the Ernie-inspired group, is we had over every single overpass on our highways, either Ron Paul Peace or Ron Paul Prosperity or Ron Paul Revolution. So that was I always call that the Ernie Brigade.
Yeah, it's a bypass the man. you know, we got to get on TV. I go, why? I got hundreds of thousands of people on the highway. The one thing that I did want to share with you is we're taking on, you know, Ian's concept. We kind of been doing it for years anyway, this little FM transmitters. So what we're doing is we just started the assembly this last week. We're creating the first 10 kits in cases, everything of FM transmitters that we are just putting. We're gonna own Arizona. I mean, just to show that we can, because I am of the opinion they're going to be shutting down whatever they can, YouTube channels, this, that. They cannot let this continue. The big bad guys are up against the ropes, and they're starting to go down, and they will lash out. But what they don't understand is that you can't stop the signal. You know, everything goes somewhere and I go everywhere. I mean, you know, it's just we are going to get the information out in a lot of different and varied ways. So that's one thing I want you to look forward to. But I want you to, you know, let's take the rest of the show here to tell me about Liberty Forum. You know, Liberty Forum is what? You know, how would people know to go register? Why would they want to go? Tell me all about Liberty Forum.
Certainly, Liberty Forum started 5 years ago. Is we had Porkfest, the most epic libertarian party. It's just a fantastic summer retreat. But we know that New Hampshire has winter, and we wanted to own up to it and tell people, you know, we do have winter, it's cold. Come check out New Hampshire in the winter. So the idea of Liberty Forum was spawned, a winter counterpart to Porkfest. It's in a hotel. It does have meals. It's a little, you know, it's not camping per se. And we have speakers, but you can also meet fellows. To me, the whole thing is about getting in a room with 200, 300, 400 like-minded people and just feel the electricity. That's what Liberty Forum is to me. And this year, this will be the fourth year I'm running it. And one thing we decided to do is have no duplicate speakers. So if we had a speaker on before, we're not going to have a speaker this time. So we have some inside the system activists, outside. We have kind of a lot of a farming theme, like raise your own food.
Very cool.
How to raise your own food, like outside the system, that's kind of developed. And that has really hit home with the natives. I have people who are not Free Staters. They're not even in Free Stater, but they believe in food freedom. And they realize even their big liberal government is encroaching on their food freedom. So we're kind of reaching out to the left in that area. So it was an idea that I'm trying to bring, you know, the left, the right, the center, the anarchists, all in a room, and let's talk about the areas we agree on.
Oh, food's big, man. That's a great idea. We really have a lot of success in that. We moved up to a little farm up here. We got goats and chickens and gardening, and I even tried to grow some tobacco. It doesn't like Arizona. But the you know, the thing that I'm hoping they start to realize and to learn is how much in common you have, and their enemies are your enemies, and for the same reason.
Absolutely. It's amazing how, you know, I also live in a small little farm, and it's, you know, someone made a joke to me. I'm like, well, you know, that's illegal. And I said, well, it can't be. It's in your own backyard. I said, that's how much the government's in our lives. And they said, well, you're doing it. I'm like, oh, I don't care if it's illegal or not. I'm still doing it. So I think people are getting it, that the government is too big. It's you know, if I'm on a small little farm and I'm not hurting anybody, what's the big deal?
You know, the one thing I'm really hoping in the future, we're going to be working really hard this year. That's why you see Charles Goyette has a new book, author of The Dollar Meltdown, New York Times bestseller. The new one is called Red and Blue and Broke All Over, okay? And it's going to be another New York Times bestseller. I read a galley copy. Very good. And this is a good primer for a lot of people on just everything. And it's why freedom works. Why? Why is freedom? You go, freedom's the answer. What's the question? Okay, why? And he goes from beginning to end on you understand why. And I'm going, man, this is fantastic. Well, he's so enthusiastic about this getting off of the Fed slave script, whatever the next version is. And I know that there's a lot of like-minded people there in New Hampshire. Do they have some kind of a barter trade with their food, eggs, for kind of, and I know even though it may be illegal, but in their culture, are they supportive of this kind of thing, getting off the monetary system?
There are definitely people here bartering, and I would say not just the Free Staters. A lot of the Free Staters use Schreyer silver, they'll use dime cards, they'll use some other things. But there are definitely people here in town. Like, we have a local farmer's market, and I saw someone trade a piece of paper, some loaves of bread, for a jar of maple syrup. And I knew the guy. I go, what's on the piece of paper? He goes, you know, maple syrup is not worth, you know, two loaves of bread. She owes me eight loaves of bread. And I literally was smiling ear to ear, and I said, we're going to win. When we can get locals who aren't involved in the movement, per se, already getting out of the dollar system, it's just a matter of time before it collapses. It was a great moment, you know, here in my little town in New Hampshire, to see that end around.
Yeah, you know, I don't think the big bad guys, you know, really understand how much this is permeating our culture. I don't think they get it. And this is where they're going to get nailed. This is it right there. And that's why it's in the Fed. And they haven't had that opposition ever. And in the last 4 or 5 years, or heck, just the last few years, it's really getting to where they're going, damn, we be in trouble. So they're going to have to distract us with some, you know, mushroom cloud somewhere. You know, I'm worried. I mean, what's your thoughts of the future? What might happen?
Yeah, you know what? They're always going to contrive something to get us to fear, right? And I think that, to me, now I've kind of studied the movement and so on, it's really one word is fear. They're afraid, and they need to keep us afraid so that we're not free. And I think it's our job to spread the messages that empower yourselves. You don't have to be afraid. You know, live your life. And, you know, hopefully, I think with the internet and Facebook and all these different message boards, we can connect and reach out to each other.
Go ahead and give out the website for Liberty Forum. How they get hold of you?
freestateproject.org/Liberty Forum.
freestateproject.org/Liberty Forum. I bet you if you Google Liberty Forum, New Hampshire, it'll blow up all over the place. Hey, Chris Lawless, Free State Project. You move there, he's going to help you. Aren't you, Chris? Come on, I get a commitment from you?
Absolutely.
Hey, thanks for coming on. Hold on a second. I want to talk to you a little bit more, Chris. We'll be right back here in the next hour with Larkin Rose on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, in just a little bit.
From the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, here each and every day, weekdays on LRN.FM from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Oh, special guest we got for an hour, Larkin Rose. We need to get caught up because, I mean, damn, there's been lots of stuff going on. And he's been in the background a lot of this, and we haven't had to, I don't think we've had a chance to talk since the Fusion Center here, you know, had something to say about activists passing around an article by Larkin Rose, when should you shoot a cop? You know, and I tell you what the gist that I got out of it, Larkin, was sometime before the sliding door on the cattle car closes, okay? It's sometime before then. Well,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And what happened, the Fusion Center, they had the Occupy Phoenix thing going on. They were saying somebody was passing out copies of your article. All these Occupy Phoenix, you know, ne'er-do-wells, lefty guy, they want to shoot cops. And how they did it is they would take this writing, they gave it to the sheriff's department, Arpaio, and had him deal with the media and made a big woo-hoo out of it. And I'm like, are you guys stupid? I don't think you guys realize what you're doing. And it became a big deal. It was all over radio and everything, television here. And all it did was drive them to read your well-reasoned and easily supported article. And I go, man, I don't think this is going to have the effect that you guys thought it did. Now, what kind of reaction did you get? But why did you write that anyway?
Well, for the obvious reason that it was titled that way to freak people out and make people get upset before reading it and then hopefully actually read it.
No, they didn't read it. They just liked the title.
Two very obvious categories of responses. One is from the people who saw the title and didn't dare to read it and freaked out. And, yes, I tried to shoot cops. Completely having tantrums all over the place and saying, it's never okay to shoot cops. And, well, how about Nazi Germany? You know, then was it, well, And then the other category, of course, was people who actually read it. And it was really interesting to watch the back and forth on various, you know, websites and chat boards and everything else where people started talking about it, because to me the most positive thing was there were a lot of people, including conservatives and constitutionalists and even some people who describe themselves as liberals, who said, you know, I hate to say it, but I read the article and it's sort of true. There has to be some point at which we don't let them do whatever they want to us. And that's basically all the article says, is there is some point at which you don't petition and you don't vote and you don't whine. You say, I'm not going along with it. And if you pull out a gun to make me go along with it, I'll pull out a gun to make you not make me go along with it.
Well, this is one thing. I remember, you remember when we had the, you know, the black man with the AR-15 thing, okay?
Yeah.
And What happened was we knew what was building up. William Kostrick in New Hampshire had brought his, because he always wore his firearm, and he's from Scottsdale here. He goes to New Hampshire. Obama comes to do something, and they have he has a sidearm on. MSNBC freaks out and makes a big giant woohoo out of it because they can. And they're going, oh, he's from Arizona. Well, I knew, here they come. Southern Poverty Law Center had, you know, Heidi Byrick, director of special plans and projects and whatever, and they're doing, you know, we got racism and white skinheads and whatever supremacy stuff in Arizona. We knew it was all crap. I had her on the show a few times. But when Chris Broughton came with an AR-15, a well-dressed, well-spoken black man, it totally screwed up their plans. They didn't see that one coming, and they didn't know how to react. So finally, it just, okay, well, we don't want to play Arizona anymore, and they went and did the Huttery militia in Michigan. They went to get their press over there. Because we've been through this before, a decade and a half ago. It was Arizona, Michigan, Montana, Georgia. Arizona, Michigan, Montana, Georgia. I mean, they just always had some little, you know, scam, infiltrating, we're going to get somebody some headlines thing going on to do their gun control stuff. Well, then they had Fast and Furious. You know, that kind of got exposed. We got some other stuff coming out. So with communications and so on now, they're not really able to get away with this. And what they wanted is, man, your article, when should you shoot a cop? That just fell right in. They're going, oh, yeah. But what they didn't realize is that if people actually read it, it just made the point. And the fact of the way they were freaking out, it just emphasized what you were saying anyway. So I'm wondering, go ahead and sum it up for, you know, the audience that, you know, when do you think you should? I mean, it's cut it down. When, I mean, you kind of explained it, but I mean, you know, if I was to go to someone and, like I'm saying, before the cattle car door closes, I mean, that's pretty accurate, right?
Yeah, I would, you know, lots of people can draw the lines in different places. I didn't even particularly draw the line where I think it should in the article. I just said, you know, most people have never even thought about this. They don't have a line. There's no point at which most people would say, all right, this is it. I'm going to break the quote-unquote law. I'm going to disobey so-called authority, and I'm going to resist with force if I have to. Most people don't have a line. They've never thought about it. They've gone as far as they can out of their way to not think about that.
Oh, but I tell you, Larkin, I need you to emphasize, you know, this is the point that I want to make. They think there should never, ever, ever be a line. And when I did Rick Sanchez on CNN talking about this, I refused to do anybody else because they wouldn't do it live. So I do them live. We have you go Ernest Hancock, CNN, you'll see it. But, you know, they asked me about Chris. Does he really believe this? Is this what, you know, is he? I go, yeah, he believes that by the time at some point they're going to plunder his generation to the point there's nothing left to plunder. And he wants to make sure that people understand at some point there will be resistance. No, there can't ever be resistance. Really?
Right. And the funny part about that is whenever somebody says, never, you should never shoot a cop, there's 100 examples you can use from history. Okay, how about Stalin's goons when they were going around rounding people up? Hitler's goons, Mao's goons. Was it okay when their quote-unquote law enforcement was doing what they did? Well, that's a different place and a different time. Okay, fine. How about here when they're hunting down slaves who ran away? If the slave had a gun, would it be okay to shoot? And that makes people uncomfortable because most people don't really want to say yes. And the answer is yes. The slave had the absolute right to shoot him in the damn head if they were trying to come take him hostage again.
You know, that's a good one. I never even thought of that one. You know, just say, you know, an escaping slave, should he be allowed to shoot his pursuers? Somebody trying to enslave him again. You know,
right.
That is, you know, because we're slaves, man.
Right. We're pretty much there. So, yeah, it wasn't even so much where I draw the line. It's that people are trained to think there isn't a line. That, no, we petition and we vote and we get really mad. You know, people talk about, we're going to demand that the politician, and I said, demand backed by what? Whining for 4 more years and then voting for another identical twin puppet crook? Or actually demand it. When you demand something, it's because you're going to do nasty things to the person who doesn't obey. That's what a demand is. People don't mean it when they say they're going to demand this or that or the other thing from politicians. Demand means, like, you know, Katrina, at the aftermath of Katrina. That's a fine example where I say, if the cops show up at your door and say, we're here to take your guns, you didn't do anything wrong, we don't even pretend you broke the law, we're just here to take your guns, the person has an absolute right to say, no, you're not, and if you don't leave, I'm going to kill you.
Mm.
And I don't know who
did. Unplug your phone, man. You're killing me.
Yeah, I know.
When we come back, we're going to have a long conversation with Larkin Rose about, you know, how things got to where they are now and where they're going. Because Larkin's kind of called a lot of this. And, of course, his book, The Iron Web, I enjoyed a great deal. And I have the CD, book on CD, in my car. And, you know, I'm just waiting to, you know, the next road trip, you know, I'm going to be listening to that. So we'll talk about that more. Come back.
Arizona has been one of the hottest real estate markets in the past, up until the last couple.
That phone is freaking annoying, man.
Oh, there. Finally, I couldn't reach it with my damn headphones on. I finally just yanked the cord out of it.
All right. Cool. Thanks.
Hardly anybody ever uses it, and now it's ringing off the hook.
So what we're going to go ahead and do, because they know you're on and they want to hear their ring, you know. Let's go ahead. One of the things that I want to make sure that we focus on is, you know, the future, how things have changed, what they were, the impact that you've had in the, even serving time. We can, you know, touch a little bit on that. Yeah, let's start off with that. When we come back, I go, you know, I'll just go, you and your wife, you know, served some time and did your part, and you got time to write the book. So we'll go ahead and hit on that real quick, but I don't want to focus on tact. You know, I get it. You know, everybody gets it. You know, it's, you know, screw them. But, you know, what the future is, we're really focusing on the silver thing. You know, just you want to vote, you know, do some wallet voting. Just bypass or hope for. What is your primary website? Just Larkin Rose?
LarkinRose.com, yeah.
I want to get the guys to make you a line of silver cards.
Oh, that would be cool. Yeah.
You know, this is. Let's see. Yeah, you got a site we can do that. Here's who your store is. Do me a favor. Go to, are you able to go somewhere on your computer?
Yeah.
Go to Liberty. Well, first, go don'ttreadonmeme.com. M-E-M-E, meme.
I got it.
Okay. Right below the masthead on the right, down, you'll see it has like a square and it says Etsy or something like that. Click on that.
Got it.
Okay, and then start looking at the different packages and different designs they can do. And over on the right, it says 24 items. You see that?
Uh-huh.
Go ahead and click on that. And you'll see the variety of the kind of cards that they can do.
Yeah.
Okay. On the back, it has like a QR code that can go to wherever, and it has, you know, like the weight and, you know, how much it's worth and spot price of and all that kind of crap. But it's a great marketing tool, and we're using these. Now go to, open up another window, and go to libertytrade.net. Now, what libertytrade.net, we've been beta testing on this for a couple of years. We've been working on some Intel Uber Geek is doing it. What it is, it allows you, it's like a Craigslist and eBay. It allows you to do auctions like eBay and list stuff like Craigslist. But what's unique is that it allows you to select what type of currency you take. Dime cards, ounces of silver, grams of gold. I mean, you know, it's just you put it in there and you say, hey, I want this. Now, what we're doing is our entire store, our advertising, everything, when they buy anything, it converts it to shinies. Shiny. Let's be bad guys. Okay. So what happens, the dime cards, we're calling it a shiny. It's kind of like its own, you know, like an S with a little shine on it instead of a dollar sign. Uh-huh. So when you go buy something, it goes to here, you get it, it converts your ferns to the dime cards and sends them to the seller, and then you get the product. So
cool. This
is what we're doing. We're going into the silver-based economy, and I want to get you in this thing just because, okay?
Yeah.
So I'm gonna have the guys talk to you, and we'll get it all hooked up. All right, here we go.
.com. That's freekeen.com.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-
602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Change, change, change. Change, change, change. Change, change, change.
Chain of foods. Yeah, there's a chain of them. I mean, it's just one after another. And pointing it out, probably better than most, I mean, you know, damn, Larkin Rose. Now, Larkin, he was pointing this out. You know, I remember the first time I saw anything from Larkin, there was an effort to educate the people on the federal taxing system, on the IRS, on, you know, just, you know, blah. And there was a new technique. It was using these small versions of a DVD, a CD, a mini CD or whatever it was, and they were passed out everywhere. And this was something that you advocated, wasn't it, Larkin? Tell me about that project, because I saw those everywhere. How did those get out?
Yeah, that was the 861 Evidence mini CD that we came up with years ago, just as an idea. It's a miniature CD. Now probably everybody's seen them, but back then they were really novel. I didn't know they existed. I didn't know they would play in most computers. And we thought, let's just make a multimedia presentation to talk about the federal income tax issue and demonstrate that, you know, completely aside from the philosophical issue, which is what actually matters in the long run, the government's breaking their own rules and lying about what their own quote-unquote laws say, and that the federal income tax is not what people have been taught it is. So this little mini CD we made had interviews with former IRS people and CPAs and attorneys, and went through some of what the government's done to try to shut this up, and so we made it so people could buy them for almost nothing, you know, buy them at cost and hand them out all over the place. And as you can guess, the feds weren't thrilled about that. That was one of the reasons they wanted to go after me, and big a pain in my neck as they possibly could.
Let's talk about that real quick. You and your wife, and at the time your daughter was young, and you're just asking, hey, look, man, I mean, the law says this, either it does or it doesn't. I mean, you know, you show me. And they went, oh, we'll show you. And I remember an IRS individual, they were asking about this. He was on at a press conference, and they go, you know, so how do you enforce this? I mean, what's your answer to this? Well, our answer is enforcement. What they were saying, our answer is a freaking gun to your forehead. That's our answer.
Right. It was Terry Lemons, I still remember, his IRS spokesman. Well, what about all these questions people are asking? Well, we're answering them with enforcement actions. And that was obviously the case in my situation, because they admitted, you know, all my meetings with the IRS were recorded and everything, and they admitted at the meetings, we don't know why it says that, we can't really answer your questions, we'll have to get back to you. And then 3 years later, they get back to me with a dozen armed goons knocking on my front door and barging into my house and stealing all my stuff.
No, this is exactly what they, you know, they wanted everybody to know, is that, look, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're right or wrong, we got the freaking guns.
Right. Well, so, hurt you. They function exactly like terrorists. You know, we don't have to win you over. We don't have to persuade you of anything. We'll just scare the hell out of everybody by hurting some people very publicly.
Well, tell us what they, you know, real quick, the sentence was, you like did a year, then your wife watched your daughter, and then you come out, and then she had to do a year or something like that, wasn't it?
I did. Well, it was a year. 15 months was the actual sentence, but if you don't start fights and stuff, it comes down to just barely over a year. And then my wife did a month afterwards for being my wife. That was what she was punished for, and that was all she was punished for. Just, I have to throw in, I have to mention this whenever I can, the prosecutor, Floyd Miller, that piece of bad stuff, said out loud that the only reason they asked for jail time for my wife is because she wouldn't plead guilty. She wouldn't say, oh gosh, I knew we owed it. And so it was forced confession. We're going to punish you because you wouldn't falsely confess. Otherwise, no jail time. And he said that. That's slimeball. And that demonstrates they're just terrorists. All they want is, well, if we terrorize you into doing what we say you should, and you pretend you owe this tax, or you pretend you're the bad guy, everything's okay.
It reminds me of something.
You stand in taint of high treason. Against whom?
Against your king. Have you anything to say?
Never in my whole life did I swear allegiance to him.
It matters not. He is your king. Confess, and you may receive a quick death. Deny, and you must be purified by pain. Do you confess? Do you confess? Then on the morrow you shall receive your purification.
Now guess who I think of every time I watch that movie?
Other than the accent, that was pretty much it.
I mean, you know, it's like, you know, it matters not. He is your king. You know, yep. This is exactly what you went through, and it's so rare throughout history that you have. I mean, how many, you know, hundreds or even thousands of years do I got to wait before another William Wallace comes up? You know, so here's Larkin going, hey, man, you know, and your wife. Nah, I'll do a month. You know, yeah. So this, the inspiration that you had on a lot of people was probably, you know, you're probably just now coming to the realization that a lot of people were paying attention. And I'm wondering how it is that you're operating on day-to-day, you know, outlook on America and life and humanity in general. And do you kind of, you know, bring it down to just America or English speaking? Is it a worldwide thing? You know, what is the future? What's the trend you see us on?
Well, I think if there's any hope for the world, it has to be here, because this is where sort of we got the closest to people understanding self-ownership. There are things about the Constitution that I think were a huge mistake, but in the debates and in the Declaration of Independence and things like that, you see traces of people actually waking up to self-ownership and the fact that we own ourselves and we don't have to answer to any master. And then they mix that in with the government and screwed it up. So I think if there's going to be, and there will be, when we get to freedom, I think it will be here first. And no, we have never been at freedom here, not in 1776, not ever. But I'm actually starting to be optimistic again. Now, it was hard to be optimistic when I was sitting in a cage after 12 complete morons, after hearing the whole case, all they could think was, you didn't do as you were told, you're guilty. And then I'm sitting in a cage writing books, and it was sort of hard to be optimistic then. Since then, I've seen a huge change in the number, a huge increase in the number of people able to think about these things. Not just thinking, oh, whoever's in office, he's a poo-poo head, we got to vote for this guy in, you know, which is, you know, we've been trying that for 200 years. How well does that work? But finally, a large number, and it's growing daily, of people are actually able to consider the fact that maybe they shouldn't be beholden to any master. And that's a drastically radical thing to be able to consider. And
okay, let me ask you this. Now, think about it during the break, because my question is this. You know, is that a human thing that we can just all kind of, you know, understand? Or is it a generational thing that we can only really count on the youth, you know, coming up going, this is just crap. And the older Americans that have been indoctrinated for so long, can they be saved? Or we just got to wait for, you know, whole generations just die off? I don't know. We're going to find out what Larkin Rose has to say about that very question when we come back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
The Matrix is a system, Neo. That system is our enemy. When you're inside, you look around, what do you see? Businessmen, teachers, lawyers, carpenters. The very minds of the people we are trying to save. But until we do, these people are still a part of that system, and that makes them our enemy. You have to understand, most of these people are not ready to be unplugged. And many of them are so inert, so hopelessly dependent on the system, that they will fight to protect it. Were you listening to me, Neo? Or were you looking at the woman in the red dress?
I was...
Look again. Who is it? Sentient programs. Anyone we haven't unplugged is potentially an agent. Inside the Matrix, they are everyone and they are no one.
They are guarding all the doors. They are holding all the keys, which means that sooner or later, someone is going to have to fight them.
Someone.
I won't lie to you, Neil. Every single man or woman who has stood their ground, everyone who has fought an agent has died. But where they have failed, you will succeed.
Why?
Their strength and their speed are still based in a world that is built on rules. Because of that, they will never be as strong or as fast as you can be.
What are you trying to tell me? That I can dodge bullets?
No, Neo. I'm trying to tell you that when you're ready, you won't have to.
Oh, see, that's the fear right there. When we are ready, we won't have to. And that ready is coming from minds like Larkin Rose. Now, Larkin, the generations that we're looking at, the minds we're trying to free, it seems like the younger ones are, they're pretty much there already. It's just how much indoctrination they can get. They try and, you know, get them at, we need to start putting them in public school at 3 years old. We're not indoctrinating them enough in kindergarten. First grade didn't work. We need to keep them longer in eighth grade. I mean, dang it, man. Trillions of dollars and generations trying to get them in the worship of the state, and it's just not working. Damn it. You know, so I look at that, I don't have much of a problem. You know, the internet, that's why they got to deal with the internet. But then we'll bypass it. Hackers are already starting to raise funds to put our own communication satellites up, and we're going to bypass it. I've been predicting this for a long time. But the older Americans, the ones that were getting your disc, they were getting your argument about the IRS. They were getting it, passing it out. They didn't like the IRS, but they saw the government still as the vehicle for, you know, going against them, as if the IRS and the government and this whole mindset wasn't the same thing. So I'm looking at the older generation. What is it that is the block for them? I don't understand it. Maybe you do more to help me.
Well, I think when somebody has spent their whole life with their worldview based on the paradigm of authoritarianism, it's really hard for them to reconsider it and look at it objectively. So, you know, if somebody's been indoctrinated for 5 years or something, they've been in school, you know, the younger generation heard a few years of it. They look at the politicians and think, what a joke. I mean, it's so obviously a con that I think the younger generation, they don't have to overcome that much indoctrination. The older generation does, and I think a lot of them just never will. There are beliefs that they've held forever, and they won't let go of them, no matter how much you can show that they're completely irrational and destructive, because it's too uncomfortable when you're, you know, you spent most of your life already believing something to turn around and admit, yeah, I was totally wrong. However, I do know a lot of people who are 40, 50, 60 who actually have finally started to question it and reconsider. And that amazes me because I never expected them to. And I target the younger generations just because I think, well, they might be able to think about it. You know, it's a disturbing thing for anybody to think about that the whole joke of authority and government and what we call law is a lie, start to finish. It's a superstition that doesn't make any sense. It was hard for me to come to that realization, and I expect it to be hard for anybody. But in recent years, I'll use my parents as an example. They actually both passed away in the last 2 years. But I was so proud when my mom relayed to me that somebody called on the phone asking for money, donations for Republicans, something or other, because they were both Republicans for years and years and years. And asked my dad, well, are you a Democrat or a Republican? And he said, I'm an anarchist. And they had no idea what to do and just hung up. So even that, it took a long time, and we talked about it a ton, and they, you know, slowly inched along in that direction. But I think, you know, it's so much a matter of, if you feel like you're the only one in the world who believes it, you don't want to believe it. But when you hear it from more and more people, and more of us dare to stand up and say, the whole thing's a joke, it's not, you know, voting for Tweedledee or Tweedledum is not going to do any good. It never has. It's supposed to keep you in this trap, thinking you have power when you have none. And so even some of the older generation are now able to think about it. Now, most aren't. Most in all generations aren't. And I think a lot more in the younger generations are, just because they haven't gone through as much state worshiping indoctrination.
Well, you know, although it's different. I tell you what's different now is that my children, they graduated high school, like, I don't know, I think that last one, like 4 years ago. And the difference was that they have access to information instantaneously on the internet. And now it's getting to where it's instantaneously on their iPhone droid sitting there in the back of the classroom going, bull, you know? So I don't think it, because the teachers, it became very clear to me, certainly after I graduated, you know, high school and did a little college and all that, that I'm going, wow, they really don't know jack. And I started, you know, the teachers of my children when they were young, I'm going, holy moly, they can't pass the third grader test. So, you know, they are not smarter than a fifth grader. Well, I'm going, okay, what is the best method for the older generation? This is a suggestion that I have in my experience as an activist doing this kind of thing. It is always a mistake to try and get them to be convinced and agree with you immediately. You know, this is it. Everything you ever believed forever is all crap and you shouldn't and whatever and so on. They big resistance to that. They start digging their foxhole, putting up sandbags. They start, you know, fortifying their position. They get defensive. They just start reading from 3x5 cards supplied them by Fox News and Clear Channel. I mean, they, you know, they just, you know, Hannity said, Rush, you know, said, whatever, Fox News. O'Reilly. So I'm going, all right, if you are going to have an impact on them, you don't want to convince them. You just want to make sure that they understand why you're so convinced. You give them your perspective and what brought you to that and why, and you just let it go. Little bit at a time, little bit at a time. Over years, even campaigns, like every couple of years, you come back, you're going to the same forum, it's the same people. All of a sudden, they'll come up, pull you on the sleeve and say, hey, did you know about and hear about and this is, and they have an opinion about something, as if it was their idea, because it was their idea. You just planted the seeds in how this stuff works. And then they start to see it, and that cognitive dissonance is the one idea in their head starts to win over. It's the truth. It's the one that's dominant. And if you don't put them in a defensive mode, they'll start to come around on their own. I see this happen. That's the only way it can happen. But some people are so dependent, so involved in, like, you know, this Matrix scene that we just played. They're so dependent on the system, they will fight to defend something they know is indefensible. So Larkin Rose has been a big part in the understanding of a lot of people, and basically for those that already get it, how to argue it. Now, you had another book, you know, The Most Dangerous Superstition. Tell me about that book, what it did, what kind of impact it's had, and why you wrote it.
Well, that's the most important thing I've ever written.
Oh, most important thing he's ever written. We got to hear about it after the break here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and my very, 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 very special guest, Larkin Rose, and his latest book, The Most Dangerous Superstition. You know, we're going to hear why in just a little bit. You stay tuned. We know you're out there. We can feel you now. We know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. We don't know the future. We aren't here to tell you how this is going to end. We're here to tell you how it's going to begin. We're going back to editing the next edition of Freedom's Phoenix Digital Magazine now, where we are telling the people what you don't want them to know. We're showing them a world without you, a world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries, a world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice we leave to you. Subscribe at freedomsphoenixeasy.com. That's freedoms with an S, phoenixeasy.com.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Hey! One man, one goal.
the mission of Larkin Rose. One man, one mission. Larkin, help me out here, man. What's your mission? Tell me, what's your mission?
To have people reclaim ownership of themselves and get rid of the super stupid superstition known as government.
Okay, now why do you call it a superstition, most dangerous superstition? Tell me about your book, why you wrote it, and what the impact is.
The most dangerous superstition, it actually gives the punchline on like page 2 or something, which is that the belief in authority and government, the belief that there can be a legitimate ruling class, even limited and tiny and supposedly good, that belief is by far the biggest threat to humanity. You know, we're not in a world where 6 billion people think it's okay to steal on their own or okay to murder. Most people of most religions and most nations, they have their basic moral code fine. They know you don't attack people, you don't beat them up, you don't steal their stuff, except the basement. And if people would – it really is just a superstition, because it isn't that all those people are evil. It's they've been taught to believe a gigantic lie, which leads them to accidentally advocate mass evil. And some of them, it causes them to go out and perpetrate it. The ones with badges and soldiers' uniforms, they go out and commit evil and they, hey, I'm just following orders. I'm enforcing the law. That must be good, right? If not for that superstition, if people were, you know, just as ignorant, stupid, and short-sighted as they are now, if they just gave up that superstition, we would take a flying leap towards utopia.
Okay, how did they get that? You know, there's some, you know, well, I tell you, you know, it's always, you got caveman, de la, you know, going out hunting, gathering kind of tribe. This guy's in charge. He's got the bigger club kind of thing. And thou shalt do what I say or go over there. And it just gets to the point that it evolves into some kind of justification for the guy to do that. So then they're saying, you know what we need to do? We need to make you believe that I'm the guy. And how do we do it? Well, it's religion, you know, some superstition, or it's that, you know, that which governs best is the guy that governs with the biggest club. I mean, you know, there's some kind of transition that we have always constantly been under, that there we're supposed to be under something. And it's like with the Arab Spring thing, I'm going, you know, these young Egyptian kids, they're like, they don't need a new pharaoh. You know, can we just show you own yourself? You don't need pharaoh number 300 and whatever. But I'm wanting to know, how do you classify it as a superstition? I mean, you know, how did it become, you know, ingrained in our culture, in our mind? And how do you extricate people from that? I mean, because I think you hit it on the head, you know, but I'm just, you know, how can you, and I'm sure you do it in your book, you know, look, you're living under a superstition. You know, how do you convince them? What's your argument?
Well, it's basically, I can use anybody's belief system just by questioning them what they believe to demonstrate that there is a contradiction inside the head of every person in the world who still believes there's such a thing as government. It's not, you know, it's not that they believe murder's good and I believe it's bad and I'm trying to talk them into that. It's they know that murder's bad, but they think there's these weird mythical pseudo-religious political rituals that can make it okay. They can make theft okay. They can make what they know are immoral acts when human beings do them. They imagine them to be legitimate when they're done by way of legislation. So I can demonstrate by somebody's own belief system that their belief in statism and government is a completely irrational superstition. It's just something they were taught. Now, there is sort of there's a component that we're sort of pack animals, so there's sort of a tendency to have an alpha male and follow him. But I think that's a very small part of it.
Well, define superstition, though. I mean, I need you to, you know, just to have a superstition or be in a superstition doesn't define what a superstition is. It's kind of a, you know, some
right. It's
a
thing you believe in without any evidence for it, and even though it's completely irrational, because you were told to believe in it, because you hear everyone around you. You know, it's Santa Claus. The belief in government is the belief in Santa Claus.
You know, the best depiction I saw of this that we've had on Freedom's Feet, even in the magazine and stuff several times, was the five monkey thing. You ever seen that where they, you know, they put, you know, three monkeys in a cage and then you know, they go up the stair to get the banana and they spray water on them And then every time they go up, they spray water on the monkeys toward the monkeys. They don't go up the stair. They put a new monkey in there. He goes up to get it, so all the other guys beat the crap out of the monkey, you know, because if you go up the stairs, they know they're going to get wet. And you keep replacing them until you finally get no monkey has ever even got wet. It's just that. You know, it's just a culture thing, a superstition that they created. You don't go up the stairs to get the banana. You know, right. So it's kind of a conditioning thing.
That's exactly what happens. All the monkeys around us really and truly act as if the crooks in Washington, D.C. have a right to rob us and tell us what to do. And so all the other ones grow up believing it because, well, everybody acts that way. There must be some reason to
it. It's because they used examples like Larkin Rose and his wife going to jail. That was the spraying of the water on the monkeys. You go up there, get the banana, guess what? You're going to get sprayed. Oh, you don't think so? You never got sprayed? You don't even personally know anybody that got sprayed? Well, there's Larkin Rose got sprayed, okay? So,
right.
You know, I can see the superstition. It's how it's a... It's like a mind game that they do on us. It's a psyop that they've perpetrated. But in your book and what you write and the things that you do, you're very effective about trying to extricate minds from that. What's your most effective method or weapon?
I would mainly the book, The Most Dangerous Superstition, which basically puts into writing what I did for years in chat rooms and in person, which is come up with a line of questioning that will make anybody run into their own belief system. And hit a conflict inside their own head. I don't have to say anything about what I believe. I can just ask questions of anybody who believes in government and have them arguing with themselves. And then they get mad at me because they have to get mad at somebody and they don't want to get mad at themselves. But that plants the seed. And hopefully they look at it later and say, yeah, that doesn't match. You know, theft is bad except when we write down on pieces of paper and do these rituals and then it's good. That doesn't really make sense. And you can just dissect the belief to show it isn't some rational thing we came up with. Government isn't like some practical idea that we came up with to organize things. It's a completely batty superstition that doesn't make any sense morally or rationally or in at any level. But everybody believes it because they see everybody else believe it. They see everybody else bowing to the politicians, calling them authority, calling them government. And calling their commands laws and calling their demands taxes. I thought I unplugged that dang phone. Why is it still going off?
Now well, you know, I tell you, you know, it also comes into where you have pastors and preachers and so on that are coming together. They're going to endorse a candidate. You know, if you want to get into heaven and move up, you know, depending on who we endorse is, you know, first, you're not going to get to heaven unless you vote. And then how far up in the pews you get towards the front row if you vote for the guy we tell you, because if you don't, you're going to hell, okay? So this, it's like a superstition on top of a superstition on top of a superstition. And I'm going, you know, and you know, I would consider myself a man of faith, you know, but not, you know, any particular way they want. Because let me tell you what I found out. In my life, you can never be Christian enough. You can never be atheist enough. You can never be anarchist enough. I mean, you know, so I'm just, you know, whatever I am, you guys can just, you know, leave me alone. But the point is that they use this one superstition to justify another one. And they want to make sure that we are controlled. There's a truth. There's some kind of a harmonic. There's some kind of a collection of brain cells or some kind of something in our head that they're plucking with some kind of a connection to the truth, that there is some kind of a spiritual aspect to humanity, that there is some kind of ultimate truth, the way, and they got to pluck that in order to get you to pay attention to them or give a veneer of credibility to whatever they're saying. And it's something that goes like this. I own myself. I wish to be left alone. And to do that, we're going to create this government that pinky swears, that promises that they're going to make sure that I get left alone. And if they become destructive to that end, it's time to alter or abolish. Well, then they create a government that says you're not allowed to abolish. I'm going, oh, okay. Well, you know, the revolution was co-opted, you know, with the Constitution, in my opinion. I'll give you a last word on that one. What do you think, Larkin?
Yeah, absolutely. Every piece of authoritarianism was a lie from the beginning.
You know, this has been a great conversation. We're going to have Larkin on more often. He'll be writing for February's E-Zine on War. What's it good for? Be right back with Sabelle Edmonds in the next hour. You guys stay right there on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock.
Live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear! No fear, no fear, no fear here on Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day, weekdays here on LRN.FM from the beautiful studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. Now, Sabelle Edmonds. I mean, what can you say about Sabelle Edmonds? And we're talking about you want to have no fear. It, you know, there's always some fear there. I mean, there's a definite concern, but some things just need to be done, and they overwhelm your fear and your duty to humanity. Sabelle is one of those people. Having been called up after 9/11 as a translator for the FBI because she speaks several languages, she goes in and she, you know, becomes aware of a lot of things. Well, they did not want the people to know what she knew. In the process of getting this out, which eventually did come out, and it's a long story, and we got in the archives, and we may talk about that, but what I want to share with you is that this experience and the people that have come to support her and she support them, what's happened is that a clear picture of the tapestry of corruption and the evils of us going to war is very clear to Sabelle Edmonds. Now, she has a website, boilingfrog.com. I got that right. It's boilingfrog.com, right?
Boilingfrogspost.com.
Okay, here it is. I got it. I was looking for it. Boilingfrogspost.com. Now, Sabelle, you know, you and I have talked over the years, you know, even back before you could really say what was going on.
Right.
And I tell you, you know, now that you've been able to kind of tell your story, now that it's gotten out in court documents, now that it's well known to everybody that we were being lied to, I'm wanting to get from your perspective and for the audience. I know you're busy. You're a full-time mom. The website's going crazy. You're very limited on time. But, you know, I appreciate you taking out the time for us. But right now, I want you to tell the people what you think they need to know that they're not being told. I mean, Syria and Iran and warmongering this and that and what's coming, the presidential campaign, Lavalusha. I mean, everything from your perspective, you're going, you know, I bet that people don't know this. What might that be?
Well, first of all, as far as the mainstream media goes and what the majority of people here are listening to, they don't know much or they know only false information. But as far as the people, and this is, I'm really emphasizing this because we the people, we have our own responsibility too. And that is, there is no real desire to know. I mean, there is this denial, there is this wishful thinking, there is this looking the other way. And for me, that is far more bothersome than the crooked media that we basically all know about. I mean, even those people who are following the mainstream media, if you were to ask them, they would tell you, oh, yeah, they give you a lot of balonies and they are really greatly under the influence of the corporations and the government. But there is this lack of desire and maybe to a certain degree a subconscious decision that they have made not to know. They don't want to know because the reality bites, because the facts and the realities are really ugly and painful, and that ugliness actually reflects on them and it reflects from them. because you just talked about these wars, right? And even when through the alternative media, all this information comes out that they have been lying to us on Libya, and they got us in there, and most of the casualties and deaths are the ones that we caused. We're the ones that we caused. And then when they come on Syria and they tell you Assad is murdering thousands of people without sourcing anything, they just get these numbers from the air, and then they conveniently omit the fact that most of the deaths occurring in Syria are caused by the rebels. And these are from the people, ordinary people who live there. I mean, we have been reporting on this, and of course the mainstream media is not picking up those. They are just going with what the government is giving them. They want to just beat the drums for the war.
Why? 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 This is, you've seen this for the past decade. I know from talking to you before, and as time goes on, and a lot of these kind of conversations with people in your position, that it's always been, if people only knew this, then it'd stop.
And I don't say that because people, I think most people do know, but most people have given up on their rights. They have given up. I mean, most people, they see themselves as powerless, and most people want to engage in this wishful thinking that we are still this great nation. We are a fantastic nation. We are a democracy. And the fact that they participate in all these murders and illegal wars, because what? These wars are financed by us, the people. We are paying for this. And these wars are sanctioned by the people that we elect, we authorize, and we put them in office. So in the end, it is us, the Americans, who are committing all these ugliness. And you know what, Ernie? Americans, most, they don't want to know this. And even if they know, they want to look the other way because it doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good. It just goes against that pride that people want to hold on to and say, you know, there are dictatorships in this part of the world and that part of the world, but here we are. We are the great Americans. We have democracy. We are not engaged in bad deeds. And if somebody tells us that actually we are, we don't like to hear it. Don't say it. So I think it comes back to the people, and you know, I spent years, Ernie, by first blaming the FBI and the Justice Department and the White House with their state secrets privilege, et cetera, that they did and they tried to cover up, and they successfully did. And then I was blaming the Congress. I'm like, well, if only Congress did what it's supposed to be doing, if they only did their job, we wouldn't be in this position. Then I switched and I started blaming the federal courts. I'm like, the federal courts are the extensions of the same federal government. There is no separation of powers. And then I went around for the last 2-3 years, actually, and been blaming the media. I mean, this awful state of the media. But when it comes down to it, when you step back and look, you know, it's enough. It's almost like this welfare mentality, because they want other people, the media, the Congress, they being us the people, we the people, for them to do it, and while we are doing nothing, we are just sitting on their butts, we are not doing anything. And we're going to be going to the polls every 2 years, and we're going to put the same people in the office or the exact similar kind of people in the office, and we are paying those tax dollars month after month after month, year after year. You know what? We are to blame. We the people. Something is really wrong with we the people.
Okay, let's go ahead and focus on that. All right? Now, this is one thing that I want to talk about this. If... Whoa, hold on a second. Test. There we go. I was setting my net levels. If we are going to find where the source of the problem is, we need to, you know, analyze it just as you have over the years. You know, you start blaming, you know, the guys with the shiny badge are wrong. Okay, it's the other guys that are supposed to regulate the shiny badge. Then it's the people, you know, that, you know, allowed them to be in office. You know, we put them there, so we're to blame. And then it gets, and then, but I wonder if you give any credence to the idea that it's the very system itself. This concept of God, we just had Larkin Rose on in the last hour, and his book, Most Dangerous Superstition, he's blaming all of this on the idea that we even think we need a government to represent us, that we have somebody else in charge, that we're abdicating our responsibility to ourselves to somebody with a gun. So I want us to think about that. And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk with Sibel Edmonds. What might be the solution? You know, how would we fix it and fix ourselves? We'll talk about more here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, in just a little bit.
This is Charles Goyette, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Dollar Meltdown, so you can learn how to protect yourself and your family.
Tell him
now,
that I need,
you can audit the Fed. You can
end
the Fed. But why not start by ignoring the Fed? Visit DontTreadOnMeme.com. That's Don't Tread on M-E-M-E, Fashioning the Silver Economy. A meme, a contagious idea that spreads within a culture, a spontaneous order. Nowhere is this more evident than in one's free choice in that most marketable of commodities, money. Let us Austrians use wallet voting. Don't Tread on Meme, the leading craftsman of silver dime trading cards, as well as some offbeat liberty-themed apparel. Follow the history of the dime card outreach at onceuponadime.info. And get a silver calculator app at whatisthiscoinworth.info. Boycott an empire of theft. Build a society of consent. Don't Tread on Meme. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
The Eastern world, it is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
Well, Sibel Edmonds believes it, on the eve of destruction. And she's been doing her best to make sure that, we're not all dead. And we got to give her props. You know, Sibel, you know, thank you. You know, there's an enormous amount of personal pain that you went through. And that says a lot for your family. I mean, you know, that they would be behind you on this and support this, that's phenomenal. And that just goes to your character and that of your family. And she has a website, boilingfrogspost.com. And you want to get some inside. Now, you started a whistleblowing support group, and it's kind of to challenge the system. And I want to get into the system, but tell us a little bit about your whistleblowers and how that came about and where you're at on that. And then we'll get into, you know, what your realization is on how we're going to change the system, ignore the system, bypass the system. But let's start off with the whistleblowers.
Sure. During my naive era, and this is around 2004, 2005, this was when I really believed that we had to go and pound the Congress and get them pass legislation to protect government whistleblowers. Oh, yeah, I was that naive. I set up this organization of national security whistleblowers, and we have about 150 government whistleblowers from the CIA, NSA, FBI. These are the people who after, and most of them are veterans. They've been there for 20 years, 22 years, who have come out exposing all these government criminal actions, waste, fraud, abuse, and then they've been persecuted for it, retaliated against. So we set up this organization. We said all these other NGOs, you know, they're all funded by Soros, and they don't even have any whistleblowers in them. They advertise themselves as whistleblower organizations, but they are basically ran by a bunch of baby Soros, Soros' little illegitimate children. And we want to have an organization that is only whistleblowers themselves, and we are going to be advocates for ourselves. Well, again, this was way back in 2004, 2005, and my God, we spent so much time going to Congress and rallying and pounding on these congressional so-called representatives. And if you were to go to our website, we are still active among ourselves, but you will see that since 2008, we have not wasted time going to Congress because we realize that it's just completely futile. All these things that a lot of these organizations, in order to channel dissent, they are telling you to do, oh, send a petition, and you can send a million petition there, million signatures. It goes into wastebasket. They don't care about those petitions. It basically makes people feel good. They think they have done something. Here, I'm an activist. I write every month a petition to my congressman, you know, to his office, instead of getting and saying, you know what, we want to kick them out. We want to get rid of the system because the foundation is so rotten. No matter what you try to build on it, it's going to collapse.
Well, there was
a
time that
is rotten.
There was a time that you also were advocating that you participate directly in the system, and that a lot of these people that knew, you know, kind of do what Karen Kwiatkowski is doing, that we run for Congress, you go after them. You know, what's your opinion on that?
I admire that. I did support, and I admired when Colleen Rowley was running. And again, this woman is, you know, has such integrity. And believe me, if you were to ask me if Colleen Rowley ran as a Republican or Democrat or Libertarian, I wouldn't be able to answer because I couldn't care less. These were the real Americans. These are people with integrity that I believed in, and I couldn't care less if they had a big R in front of them or a D or L. And the same thing with Karen. I support Karen 100%. I believe in Karen. And if we were to have the majority in Congress with people like, you know, Ron Paul and Karen Kwiatkowski and Colleen Rowley, we will come, you know, it will be listened to a large extent what we are seeing. But would it fix most of or many of our problems? No. Absolutely no, because you just mentioned the key word there. You said these are the system. And the system, I mean, a lot of people, they think, oh, a lot of things started taking place after 9/11. But for decades and decades, they have been designing the system for this kind of people. People who would just abide, they would just listen, and they basically abdicate all the decision-making and all their rights to the power. And it's not only the elected, the visible government we are seeing, but the real powers behind the puppets that are in the front, whether it's the Mueller or Obama. I mean, do you think these guys are really making decisions and taking us towards? Of course not. You have to look at the people who bring them into power, okay? And the people who are guiding the people to go and cast their vote, you know, for people that they want, regardless. So and the system, I give you a little example here quickly, and because it seems like a small example, but it's really big. A lot of people are talking about, you know, the outsourcing and how we are losing jobs. I mean, you hear a lot of liberals actually now taking up an issue with that. What I try to tell them, I say, I agree with that, but there is a hypocrisy there. Okay, they have indoctrinated us to outsource even our own children. Okay. And we do that. Now, I know a lot of feminists are going to hate me for saying that, but it is true. I mean, I have so many neighbors and friends who are actually paying more for daycare and the second car and the fuel for that car and the clothes than what they bring home, because they are totally designed to believe that that's what they should be doing in order to be a real, modern, progressive, liberal American, and that is, you take your five-month-old baby, you put them in an institution, just like an orphanage, at 6, 7 o'clock in the morning, and then you go and pick that child up at 5, 6 o'clock at night. And let other people raise your own children, okay? I know there are some exceptions of people who are truly in need of some extra cash, or they use the extended family members, and I'm not talking about that. I'm not trying to be judgmental. But when you have that mentality, how can you turn around and say, look at these corporations, they're outsourcing the jobs to the outside countries. If we are willing to outsource our children and we let these daycares, you know, orphanage-like daycares and the public school every day indoctrinate them with things that we don't even believe in, that are against our own moral values, if we can bring our society to accept that, I think we can get them accept anything, because if you can get your own blood, your child, and throw them to the system and say, you raise it, then I think we are capable of a lot of ugly things.
Oh, no, that's a good point. Now, it's, you know, we're going to hit the break here real quick. I just want to make this point. What we're looking at is a trillions of dollars and generations of an effort to make sure that the people are convinced that they need to turn their children over to the state to take care of them so they can go out and make more money to pay the taxes so they can have things. And they've de-emphasized the importance of mom at home or dad. You know, let's put this, not Uncle Sam. So we'll talk about more when we come back.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. And yeah, we're taking a break. Taking a break with Sibel Edmonds, BoilingFrogsPost.com. BoilingFrogsPost.com. Sibel has gone through a transition that I have been witness to, of someone inside the government that, as a good individual human being, the highest compliment. I mean, that was kind of like I remember Dancing with Wolves. You know, the biggest thing that they did is they got, you know, are you a human being? The Native Americans and that, the Sioux, they're going, hey. The Lakota or whatever, I can't remember which tribe, but they were like, hey, man, you want the highest rating? Being a good human being. Sibel Edmonds, a human being and a mother of a 3.5-year-old child. And now she's been experiencing the encroachment of the state at every level, even into the family and even into the flesh of your children without any notice or consent of a parent. Now, on the break, now, Justin TV, you get a lot of the break stuff, but I tell you, Sibel and I were talking, and I think she has a perspective she wants to share on the encroachment of the state inside your children. Share that with us, please.
Sure, and I came across this just a few months ago, and I was reading, and I came across this legislation that they just passed in California saying that the schools no longer needs the parental notification or consent to administer certain vaccination to these children. So they can do it without, you as parents knowing. And even though there was, a little bit of opposition to this legislation, it passed. Now, they are saying these are your underage children, and we have the total control to give them, if we choose to give them anthrax vaccine or even experiment on them, and you don't even have the right to know. We are not obligated to notify you as parents. This, you take this and you put it side by side with the fact that, they are now opening all your mails. This is the government. All your Christmas gifts, they have the right to go through your stuff and what you privately are supposed to be receiving, and you won't even get notified. This is exactly the same as saying we listen to all your phone conversations right now. They are listening to us and the email and all your privacy, and you don't have a say in this. We can go to those companies. We can request all the information on you. When you put all of these together, then you get to see the whole picture. Unlike, the media or a lot of these organizations, they look at one symptoms and then a few months ago, they put them together and then ask yourself, what does it tell you? You have no privacy. You have no say, even in the most private personal matters, even on your child's, flesh. You have no rights, and these rights belong to the state and to the government. Then for these people to go around and say, yes, we have the freedom, we have the democracy, we have First Amendment, the Second Amendment, and the Third Amendment, that would become really a kind of a mockery. So, and as I said, if you look at these bits and pieces, they are out there. But for this, after decades of indoctrination, people, it does not raise these, alarm in them. They are looking because for decades they have been taught. they have been told to trust these higher powers to make all these decisions and to take away all their rights.
What do you think is happening now with Generation Next? Are they following that prescription that their parents did? Are they changed, or what are you witnessing?
Well, it depends on which segment you're really looking at. When you're looking at, for example, these, the young new generation who are following Ron Paul, you're looking at some of those who are protesting out there, and they are challenging in their own way. You say, well, there is hope, there is some. But then again, depends on where you're looking at. And then you're looking elsewhere, you know, for example, where I live, and I'm looking at the new generation in my neighborhood, then you start feeling more pessimistic, saying, oh, my God, you know, do we have a chance? And what are we going to do? Because people say before it's too late, or they say we are moving towards the police state. And this is one of the things that I truly get angry about, as if there is this well-defined, well-measured state that everybody agrees, oh, now this is a police state.
Oh, no, we're there.
I keep asking people, I say this and this, and I give them all the, from their, as I said, communications, their children, and I say the being groped, you know, in airports, now it's in the bus stops, and then it's going to be on the train stations.
It's at the free, it's on the highways, a little Viper thing. They're doing it here in Scottsdale.
Right.
I mean,
and
we
then,
just had a big thing on. I'm going, it's not like it's going to come, it's here.
Do you know how I get to be attacked by emails, by people saying, you are being overdramatic, you are being radical, you are exaggerating, sure, things are looking really bad, but we are not. We are nowhere near being a police state, and that's when I feel pessimistic, Ernie. When I hear a lot of people and so-called civil liberties experts coming and telling me, oh, I wouldn't go that far. Well, of course, our civil liberties have been eroded, but we are far from being. And then there are people who give an example. They say, look, you are writing on your blog, boilingfrogspost.com. You're putting this news, this information out. You're not jailed. You're not tortured. And you are still continuing. See, this is not a police state. And I tell them and I say, just wait. You know, they just passed this NDAA. Just wait. Because that comes and you're going to have other justifications. You're going to say, well, it's very, very few because I may be indirectly providing support to some terrorist somewhere in the world who's trying to do something bad, maybe.
You know, one thing that was interesting to me is that they had Obama saying that, yes, I'm going to give myself this power, but I would never abuse it and do this, and as if it was going to go away for the next guy or something, you know? And I don't see this being missed by everybody. I mean, of course, most people are going to be, yeah, whatever, Hannity says, or whatever Rush told me, or whatever. But as time goes on, it's not it's a tireless minority. It's the people that understand what's happening and why and prepare for it. When things go, and they will, it'll always be economics. It always is. When you start having shortages on the shelves, when you start having real deprivation and hunger like what's happening in Arabia, when you have people, you know, like we knew Egypt was going to go. When we saw that the demographics were 40% of the people lived on $4 a day and all of a sudden food went up 120%. I'm going, what do you think's going to happen, dummy? When you got 33% of the population of Egypt is under 15 years of age. Well, you can't get away from these demographics. It's coming to America. And it doesn't matter what the people say. It doesn't matter. It's going to be what they do. How they are they able to survive? Okay, got kids. I mean, you got some chickens? Because if you don't, you know, how are you going to feed yourself when there's nothing? It doesn't matter what you got. Then your money's not going to be worth anything anyway. You got something to barter with, some precious metals, ammunition,
but Ernie,
food.
But Ernie, I'm going to play the devil's advocate here. My fear is sometimes the opposite happens. You know, we had the Great Depression happening, and when you have that kind of catastrophe and financial, really dire financial situation, then you get these chicken, turn to government and say, help us, protect us, give us money, you fix it. And they actually tend to go more towards government than less, because we have seen that happen. Isn't that what happened?
No, that's what they're doing. That's what they're doing now, and it's not working. And those of us that have come through this transition like you have are realizing we need to be an inspiration to the other people by taking care of ourselves. That is what I see as the hope, is there's enough that have learned what you and I have learned, is that it's up to us. Sybil Edmonds, BoilingFrogsPost.com.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Sybil Edmonds, you know, she's the woman. This is, you know, it's rare that you think about it. Who were the people that were just, had a big impact on a lot of our understanding of what was going on? Karen Kwiatkowski, Lieutenant Colonel in the Pentagon, sitting there while, you know, Cheney and Rumsfeld running around her desk doing kind of whatever office special plan she's gathering and sorting the intel on, Middle East and North Africa kind of got, and then they go insane. She's like, what? Seriously? What? What? You lying sacks of, you know, ooh, here's that. Now she's running for Congress. Yeah, I like Karen. Sybil Edmonds, FBI translator that translated into Turkish. She's understanding what's going on. What congressmen are being corrupt? Who's doing the drug deal? What kind of arms are being, you know, what they're saying over here is policy, and what they're actually doing, two totally different things. She goes, hey, you know, you need to, and this person you just hired, the dude from the Turkey, she's one of the agents that we're doing. You got, you know, Chet, you're done, baby. You know, your service is no longer required. You know, it's this kind of stuff. So what does she do? She goes to Congress. She tries to, you know, whistleblow. She does her civic duty. She's, I think she's Iranian, you know, by birth and her parents, but she, you know, I hate to say she's a dip. I, you know, I got her, it doesn't matter. I got her bio here and so on, but she speaks Farsi and Turkish and English, and I think probably others. So she is in demand. I mean, after 9/11, we need you to go through a bunch of these tapes. She goes, woo, let me tell you what I found out. And they go, we didn't want to know that part. And by the way, you're not allowed to tell anybody. That's what this whole thing was about. She understood what was really going on. Who do I tell you? I just sit down, shut up, and not tell and watch the whole planet go in the fascist government of rule whatever my children forever? No. You know, a lot of times it takes a mom. It takes a woman. It takes somebody that has that radar screen, that personality, that brain wiring that benefits humanity. So what? You know, the feminists, no, we're the same as men. Did it ever occur to you that you might be better at certain things? You know, heck, we can bench press a little bit more, but, you know, there might be some advantages to being wired as a woman. You know, my wife, Donna, she provides another whole entire, you know, another 100 degrees of the radar screen of perspective for I know what the heck's going on. You know, why are we, you know, not taking advantage of the perspective and the opinion of women? Now, and then what the feminists do. Off air, you know, Sybil's telling me, man, when she started doing this outsourcing of your children thing, you know, you quit outsourcing your children to the state. Oh, here they come. Oh, heck no. The feminist movement, we talked about, we can go on and on. Equal Rights Amendment was all about getting women into the workforce so they can be more just another round of tax slaves. And then you can put your kids in the control of the state so they can grow up by in their, you know, government indoctrination, mandatory youth camps, and they can be indoctrinated into thinking that, you know, yep, they got to go out and work and they got to be next generation of tax slaves. You know, what happens when you have an entire generation go, you know what? I'm going to stay home and it's going to be a job. My oldest daughter, her and her husband work. They bought a nice home. They get into fixing it up, making some money, cash. going to have their child 1st of April. So in the first week of April or so, here I got, you know, my third grandchild coming, and what's she going to do? She'll stay home. That's the job. Raise the child, that's the job. Grow a garden, that's the job. Take care of the family and your husband and your household, that's the job. That is the job. The job. Number one, pick of the litter, top, tippy-top job. Raising generation next. Sabella understands this. She's going to write an article about it for this next month e-zine. So this is outsourcing children. Manuel, the feminist, ooh, they're going to get all up in arms. What are they advocating? You know, we need to be what? So we can let the man raise our what? You know, this mentality, it's infectious. But like Sabella says, when things get that bad, that's when you start having change. Some people start demanding, no, heck no. I can see it coming, you know, but you know, bad guys are not going to go quietly into that good night. Heck no, they can't. They don't know how. Their whole thing is that they want to have, it's not even about the money. You know, money is a side benefit. It's about control. It's about power. It's about we're smarter and better and capable of, and, you know, we rule you. And oh, by the way, there's too many of you, and we're going to take care of that. You know, we're going to do this soft kill kind of thing. Bad nutrition, make your immune system go down, susceptible to whatever, and then we just flip on the switch. You know, that was one thing when I first started becoming aware, just like Sabella going through her stages, I went through the same thing. I know the stages. Now I went through them. So I recognize it. I don't get all, you know, in people's faces. I just point out things. Sabella and I have been talking for years. And, you know, there's a lot of internal, I could see how she was coming to this realization. Her child is 3.5 years old. When she started, she had her child, I could tell, you know, that it was, you know, yeah, they're asking a little bit too much of me. You know, they want a little bit too much control and inside, you know, the skin of my children's. No, 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 no. And someone like Sabella, ooh, leading the way. And the feminist movement is supported by whom? You know, the people that want them into the market so they can get more tax money out of them, indoctrinate their kids more. What happens when there's a movement nationwide for people just to, you know, live a little smaller? Stay at home. Focus on the joy and the benefit of raising your children. I'm always, that's one thing that's different that I think that I've come to grips with that distinguishes me as an individual, as a human being. That's a little bit different than most people that I associate with. Well, you know, the friends, a lot of people, they, you know, in the movement, they're, you know, the same mind. But as I was coming up, you know, my peers and friends and, you know, you go to church and at work and all this other stuff, they were thinking tomorrow, next week, maybe, you know, their vacation, you know, in a few months or next year. They weren't thinking 20 years. They weren't thinking, what's your life going to be like when your children are grown? When they go through puberty, when they're in high school, the kind of friends that they have, the cars that they drive, the jobs that they select, the education that they want. What happens when they start getting a mind of their own at puberty and all of a sudden, man, you're the freaking, you know, the man, and they are rebelling again. What, you know, how are you going to prepare for that? If you haven't raised your kids by, I don't know, 4, it's too late. So we emphasize it wasn't, you know, because I just some, you know, big giant obligation, but you know, you have an obligation and a responsibility as a parent, but I looked at it selfishly. I'm going, look, I want to enjoy this grandfather thing. I want to enjoy the rest of my life. I want my kids to be productive. I want to not have to worry about them. I want to not have to worry about, you know, if they got enough money or if they're able to sustain themselves or they're good people or they pick good spouses and so on. I don't want to have to worry about that. So I invest in their upbringing now. That's what I do. I invest in their upbringing now, not later, now. What happens when an entire generation next comes to that conclusion? What happens when they say, you know, we're going to structure our lives around maybe we only have 2 cars instead of 3. Maybe we only have 1 car instead of 2. Maybe we have none. Maybe we live on the farm. Maybe we ride horses. Maybe, 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 maybe. But all the things that give you the capacity to do that, here comes the man. Yeah, you paying taxes on that land? You regulate what you can and can't do with it? Are you on a wetland? Is it kind of got a marsh on it? Does it have, I mean, this is at a federal level because there's a plan. Let me tell you what the plan is. For you to not have your plan, you're not allowed to have a plan. It's their plan. They have, you are a tool for them. You're a revenue source for them. You need to get a Social Security number so that you can be collateralized in the borrowing of for the Chinese to be able to go spend in the military industrial new world order empire of complex gets to have their money and, you know, and here's your debt. Got it on you? You know, this is all of this is going away. All of this is going away. But what will replace it? What Larkin Rose said, you know, the most dangerous superstition is what? To think that we got to, like, you know, come up with Pharaoh number 300 and something. You own yourself. All the guests that we have, and we'll get the phone line fixed. We added on some stuff. We had some feedback things, and I balance it out in the archive. But, you know, we'll get it fixed. You know, we're working on it now. We, you know, thought we got it all fixed up, but got one more thing to do. But I'm telling you, what we are looking at right now is a change in the future based on humanity's ability to break out from the prison that's been created in our minds. For the first time in human history, we have not only the capacity, the technology, the ability, I think we're having the awareness, certainly for the next generation. Generation Next, it's coming.